Hey, welcome to Stop the Presses.
Here at the Republic Broadcasting Network. Good afternoon here on November 30th, 2020. And I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving weekend. Hopefully you gathered with family regardless of this COVIDocracy and its regulations. That stuff can just be cast to the wind based on the fraud that they're peddling. And that is just simply the end of the discussion on that. Anyway, today's guest is a first-timer, Conrad LeBeau. He's a health and monetary reform author and a pro-farm activist. He's from Wisconsin, although he spent the early part of his life, and he'll tell more about his background and his issues, in Michigan. And he's got something very interesting to outline today, a Save the Family Farms, you might say, plan. A kind of spelled out in a very simple way on how to do that, but it's based on a petition to the president, to the president and Congress that goes into more detail about monetary issues and debt and really kind of rounds out the whole initiative. How are you doing today, Conrad?
I'm doing fine. Thank you very much, Mark.
Yeah, glad to have you on the show for the first time here. And tell us a little bit about yourself. I gave, of course, a thumbnail, a little bio there, but that's not quite enough. Tell us a little more about your background and how you came onto this, and then we'll explain in considerable detail what this is all about to save the farms and get us all out from under the debt albatross, not just the farmers, but all of us. So go ahead and proceed. You have the floor.
All right. Thank you very much. I was born in Lower Michigan. I was raised in Upper Michigan until I was about 16. And then we moved, my father moved to the city after he got out of the farming business. But around 1956 or 57, I'm not sure which year, we had a small dairy farm in Upper Michigan near Kearney, just west of Natal. And it was very small. It was only 30 milk cows. But anyway, it wasn't a survivable business. But while I was milking cows, let's say, I think I was probably 13 or 14 years old at the time. And my father lived through the Great Depression of the 1930s. He was born 1905. And he was a follower of Father Charles Coughlin. Coughlin was a radio priest from Detroit who was affiliated with St. Teresa, the Little Flower. And he would speak on religious topics, and he also spoke on banking and monetary reform. He spoke every Sunday, and millions of people listened to him throughout the country. And that's about the time the Great Depression set in. It was after that time period. During the Depression, he had proposed a solution to the Depression, recommending Congress print some money and spend it to create jobs. It was a bill called the Fraser-Lemke Bill. And that bill almost passed the House of Representatives, but it didn't. And that was due to the banking lobby that stopped it. But my father told me the nature of what caused the crash of 1929. He said there were two factors. You know, one was that Herbert Hoover, the president at the time, tried to pay off the national debt. The second factor is the Federal Reserve raised interest rates. So the combination of those two factors began to shrink the money supply, and as the money supply shrunk, there was less money, less credit available for people to spend, and it led to the stock market crash in October 1929 and subsequent depression. So he compared the economy, explaining to me how the monetary system is that virtually all money enters circulation as a loan. So we have, and then there's interest charged on that loan. So we have what's called a debt usury money system. Prosperity depends on debt. It depends on the creation of debt, and then the charging of interest on this debt by the banks. And there's the banks who create debt because they also create credit, which is not money, but it's used as though it were money. And I'm talking specifically about, at that time, it was mainly just checkbook money. And that was the origin of it. But anyway, he discussed all that, and then I had all that in the back of my mind. And we'll just go forward in time. I'm going to go up to 1979, 1980. I was a real estate broker, and I was selling real estate at the time. Federal Reserve Board was run by Paul Volcker. Formerly, he was the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and he thought people were living too good and had too much money. There was too much inflation, so he kept jacking up interest rates until they got up to 18%, which put the country into a very severe recession. At the same time, it caused a couple million, at least a million farmers lost their farms during that period. And you have a lot of homeowners that lost their homes in mortgage foreclosures. So about that time, I got involved with legal research, the money system. I met attorney Lowell Beecraft of Huntsville, Alabama. He gave me a brief where he interviewed a banker explaining how they create money, actually, when they make a loan. And it's hard to understand because how the banks create money isn't that should be just a function of government. So for about 5 years, from 1981 to 1986, I designed model lawsuits to try to help farmers stop mortgage foreclosures based on the credit issue and then even based on the gold and silver issue and the prohibitions of Article 1, Section 10. Unfortunately, the courts just ran away from these issues as they were too hot. Politically hot topics, they didn't want to deal with it. So the courts were not the avenue to find relief. And by 1985, I decided that I had to get out of this because it was causing too much stress in my life. And I was broke. The farmers were losing their farms. And I said, you know, I have to do something else with my life because this isn't working. So I said, whatever, this is up to God to decide the timing of when he wants to change whatever is happening in the world. So I got out of it, and I went into the health products business, and I began writing books. Then I had a couple court fights with the Food and Drug Administration federal court. That's another story I won't get into today. They got an injunction against me for selling hydrogen peroxide because I wrote a book on it. And then they got an injunction against other products. And then they, again, in 2010, they were after me because I wouldn't. Some of the books I wrote, I had written several books, actually. But they really wanted me to stop publishing the books, but they couldn't, they didn't have the legal power to do it. So they figured they would just run me out of the health products business, which they did. Because there was no, it was impossible to provide any information on what herbal supplements do for preventing disease or treating disease. Because they made all that language illegal, which is a violation of the First Amendment and Ninth Amendment right to freedom of choice in medicine. So anyway, I got out of that completely 10 years ago. That was in 2010. In 2018, I decided, having written four or five books on health topics and some special reports, which I advertised in the American Free Press for over a year, I decided to write a book on the money creation issue. It is a booklet, and it details a lot of history, including my early conversations with my father, and it proposes, there's about 10 pages of proposed reforms in that book. So that brings us up to today. I came out with a full-page ad. It was just published in Acres USA. It will reach over 10,000 organic farmers. It's Stop Foreclosures, Save Family Farms, and there's a six-point goal described in the ad.
Yes.
And with that, for a $10 donation, people get a copy of this book, and they get a two-page petition they can send to the president and members of Congress on these reforms.
How can people, let's get that up there right now, let's get that up front. How can people get a hold of the book, and how would that work?
Well, if you can get it, you can go to leboeaubooks.com. That's LEBEAUBOOKS.com. You can download the petition for free, and you can order the book on that website.
Okay.
That's the easiest way. Or you can call the phone number at 414-231-9817. Or if you have the ad, you can just fill out a coupon and send it in.
Again, that's 414-231-9817. Yeah, that's very
handy
to have a concise book of that nature and to have a specific plan or outline for helping farmers as part and parcel of helping the whole nation, because the petition obviously goes beyond just the farming community, as important as that community is. And it's talking about really how all of us have this albatross around our necks. And, you know, Conrad, what I got out of it, reading the petition part of this, is the most important point, and that is it challenges this notion, and this notion is quite prevalent in the patriot community, that any move to print money is automatically a bad move and will cause this hyperinflation, and then each monetary unit will have less purchasing power, almost beyond redemption. And that, in my monetary research, which is considerable, and that's why I took so much of an interest in what you're doing, that is really a myth. One of the things that I found was that if you take the gross domestic product and compare that to annual income in the United States, the annual income falls far short of being able to liquidate what's produced. And so there is always a gap. There's always a shortfall, a money dearth, you might say, kind of like famine, almost a money famine, but definitely a money dearth. And so there is room to introduce more money into the economy. And besides that, as you point out in the petition, if you don't print it, you have to borrow it. And what's worse?
Well, the problem here is that what people don't know is that most of what banks lend, they actually create. There's certain things about money and let me explain a few things, like the difference between credit cards and debit cards. Most of what we use as money today is just part of a record-keeping system. It's not actually currency. The Federal Reserve notes and coins are less than 5% of our money supply. What we use as money is actually digital dollars, but we don't know that. We just use them. You have a debit card, you have a record of some dollars that were deposited in your checking account or savings account. When you spend that, it goes to someone else's checking account. Those numbers move. They're not actually money, but they're just the record itself moves. You have in a checking account, it's the same thing. Money orders the same thing. Now, with a credit card, is a little difference. People don't know that, but when you have a credit card, you're actually creating those digital dollars when you use a credit card, because you got this line of credit they give you. It's not that there's money sitting there.
There's no
credit card companies have a small amount of cash to back up these credit transactions. Now, there's a difference between your checking account and the bank's checking account. The individual checking account, you write a check, it adds to someone else's account, and it's subtracted from yours. With the bank's checking account, it's not drawn against another bank. It's drawn against that bank. It's kind of like it's the borrower that has to come and ask for the money. So in other words, if we don't cash the checks the banks give us, and we just use the checking account to spend money, we're never really dealing with money. We're dealing with, substitutes for money. A check is a substitute for money, but it's a promissory note. And so are money orders and all these other credit instruments. But what you have is you have the illusion, okay, and it is an illusion, that our money system is based on the Federal Reserve note. It's not. It's based on bookkeeping entry that's called dollars, or what the banks are now calling digital dollars, which I don't believe they define by law, but there's a couple attempts, because it's what's on the ledgers of the banks. That's what's in your account. In fact, when you go to a bank, you deposit, no matter what you deposit, whether it's a check or cash, If you go to a bank with $1,000 in cash, you get a receipt that says that's what we put in your account. And it's all done on a computer, okay? You leave that bank, that $1,000 doesn't go somewhere in a shoebox. They don't record all the serial numbers of the Federal Reserve notes you deposited. They just put it in one big pot. So the next person walks in with a check who also has a record that he has a deposit. Your $1,000 may end up going to him when you walk out the door. So what you're left with is a record. And the record is the money. And that's a hard concept to swallow because records are supposed to be reflections of something that's somewhere else. But in banking is unique because of the nature of money. Money is not consumed, it is spent. If you bought food at a grocery store, let's say that government decided to make cans of pea soup legal tender, and they just added a $5 value for every can of pea soup you bought. Well, now you could pay your debts by either making pea soup or go buying it. But if you had a grocery store and all the food was converted into money because you monetized everything, and everyone is on a diet, nobody decides to eat anymore. So one person is buying food for just to store it and look at it. You'd have one line leaving the grocery store with food. Another line would be bringing the canned goods back to the grocery store. This is what a bank is. Because otherwise, if money were food, you wouldn't use lettuce to make a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. You'd use Federal Reserve notes instead of lettuce. But if you ever tried chewing on one, they're really not very edible. And then you'd have your choice. You have the $1 bill, the $5, the $20, or $100. Well, why would you bother with the $100? You just buy the cheaper one. But see, money is not edible. And for this reason, it's constantly recycled. And banks, when banks lend money, they never lend actual legal tender money. Banks lend credit. And credit unions lend credit. They don't lend money. Real legal tender money is defined by Congress as coins or its currency declared to be legal tender. It's the stamp they put on the money. It's not what the money is made of that matters. Legal for the payment of all debts, public and private.
Yes, I agree.
What the banks are doing when they make loans is if the people aren't cashing the checks, they lend the same cash out over and over again. Now, our country was founded, the Bank of England, started by the Rothschild banker, Mayor Anselm Rothschild. And there were people before him that started it. I mean, if you really want to go back, and in my booklet, I go back to the Knights Templars 1,000 years ago. They started the first credit system in Europe. The Knights Templars, you could bring gold and silver coins and other valuables there.
Conrad, we're coming up upon the first break. It's very easy to get blindsided by the ad.
I understand.
This is very interesting to analyze how the banks work. And I know from working with the several people, Alan Myers has been on this show, Mickey Paletta and others, that the banks view your money in their account as a liability because they have
That's
to make
correct.
Good on if you come and ask for that money, especially if you ask for it all at once. And so what you think would be an asset to them is actually a liability in several respects. It is a very topsy-turvy, paradoxical world, the world of banking. And without going too far in the weeds on that today, after this ad break, we'll get into some of the actual content of your petition, quote some of that, and talk about the practical applications of that.
Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an engine cleaner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an energy cleaner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting. and help yourself to get an engine cleaner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
Extend your life with Extendovite, a 7-herb combination made from garlic, cayenne, bilberry, hawthorn, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Each herb was chosen for their abilities to help improve irregular heartbeats, chest pain, lower cholesterol, as well as normalize blood pressure and clean and strengthen arteries, plus much, much more. Doctors have taken people off of some or all of their pills just because they believe their patients got better while taking Extendovite. Get the dependability of Extendovite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Is your property a financial burden and causing you grief? Have you tried to sell but can't find buyers? Or are you just too busy to sell your property? Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
And welcome back to Stop the Presses here on the 30th of November. Yes, the last day of November 2020, your host, Mark Anderson. And I'm talking to Conrad LeBeau, his first time appearance on here. He's got a book and a petition that we gave contact info about. We'll do it again. Conrad, we're getting into the shorter segment before the bottom of the hour. Then it's smooth sailing after those next ads. And
sure.
Without getting too far into the weeds on the mechanics of banking, because, again, that can become a very Alice in Wonderland thing, suffice to say that it's been made intentionally mysterious, opaque, and complex, so the average person cannot get the grasp, or at least not easily get the grasp, of the inner workings of this monster. It's a dragon to slay or to rewire, that's for sure, and there's differing views on that. What do we do with the Fed, and so on and so forth? Do we rewire it? Do we slay the dragon? But before we get into that, the petition here that goes with the farm thing, that, you know, stop foreclosures on the farming, is a good one-two punch. Let's start with the farm thing because the bullet points will fit easily into this short segment. Stop farm.
Okay, let me cover this. The full-page ad that was published in Acres USA and is about to be published in American Free Press. The top of the ad is a stop sign. It's red. It says stop foreclosures. The other is actually a photo from 1984 of farmers carrying a sign that says Safe Family Farms. I think that was combining these two together. And basically I asked people, would they support a national movement to pressure and petition elected leaders at all levels, particularly the federal government? The 6-point bullet ad. Are we together here? Because I got somebody trying to call me on another line, and I can't get rid of them. So I'm gonna.
I can start for you.
Okay, I'm still here. Stop. Okay.
Yeah, I was gonna read it if you were distracted. But
that's
go
okay.
ahead.
Okay. No, I'm still connected. That's all. I just wanted to make sure. Anyway, the first one is stop farm foreclosures with a nationwide moratorium, and that would be something done by the president. There are governors who have certain emergency powers and pandemics or national emergencies that might be able to do the same thing. The goal, the second goal, is to reduce interest rates on farm debt by 50% or more, saving the average farm about $30,000 a year. The average farmer today is about $1.3 million in debt. Total farm debt for 1.7 million farmers exceeds $400 billion. The next bullet point is to break up the credit monopolies of the big banks. By introducing competition in lending from the federal government with newly minted coins, currency, and digital dollars. The next point is U.S. credit cards are needed provided by the government to all the American people at annual interest rates of 3% and lines of credit from $1,000 to $25,000. The second thing is to promote organic farming, to get rid of the pesticides, the genetically modified corn and soybeans, and the use of herbicides. To offer 0% interest rates for refinancing farm debt for farmers who convert to organic farming. For conventional farmers, it would be left at 3%. The last thing would be to introduce a parity or minimum markup law to support fair prices for farmers so they can recover the cost of production. This has never been done, but it should be done, and I don't have a model law to do that. That's something that I would rely on others to bring forth the ideas on, and also to prohibit unfair foreign competition. So that's the main ad, and the petition itself, I introduced this idea of, first of all, I make the reader aware that we have, and I don't get into the documentation to back this up, but I'm making a statement, and I can back it up. We have over 10,000 bankers today who are multimillionaires. We have well over 100 that are multibillionaires. They have the highest concentration of economic power in the nation, and they're not afraid to use that power in the media, in business, corporations, energy, drug companies, you name it. There are investments in over 2,000 corporations. There are major holders of stock through trust accounts, bank holding companies, and various other legal structures. They have acquired significant ownership of much of American industry, as well as the high-tech businesses that they've invested in as well, like Facebook and Google. And they're sort of eating their way into Amazon. A few years ago, I was watching an interview on television. The reporter asked Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky.
30-second mark for the next break, just so you know. We got about 30 seconds.
Okay, then I'm going to make this quick. He asked him, well, how would you deal with the federal deficit? I'll give you his answer after the break.
There you go. We're listening to Conrad LeBeau, ladies and gentlemen, here his first time on Stop the Press, is outlining a way to not just help farmers with their debts, but by extrapolation to help the entire nation fight against this monopoly of credit, the banksters. And it's a very important topic. It's the topic that never goes away. We don't want to just get caught up in the COVIDocracy and that ridiculous fraud-based crackdown based on the COVIDocracy. And so we'll be back with more from Conrad LeBeau after these messages.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Kosher-tify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Yeah, from the Little Big Horn to the Rio Grande, it seems we've seen the last lemonade stand. Well, all the flea markets in the
pit. And welcome to the second half of Stop the Presses. Today, 30 November 2020, your host, Mark Anderson. This show runs Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays from 2 to 3 p.m. Central, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern. And my guest today is Conrad LeBeau, a first-timer here on this show, explaining his petition and his book and his knowledge and his background toward helping farmers and the overall society in their eternal fight, what's become an eternal fight against the banksters, the money cartel, the debt merchants, as they were referred to by the late great radio priest, Father Charles Coughlin, whom Conrad's father listened to. Back in the day, that was a heady time when it was very out in the open to challenge the banksters. And they surely, Conrad, they surely moved, didn't they, the powers that be, to make sure that didn't happen again.
Well, yeah, they have the levers. When you have an almost unlimited supply of money, you have a lot of power. And the bankers know that, because if you can control the media, you can pretty much control people's minds. And if you control people's minds, you can control their actions as well.
Yeah, very but your petition represents a way to fight back. Granted, it you always feel like an underdog in these things. Charles Coughlin had millions of listeners and still ended up being put under the thumb, FDR, ultimately the Vatican and whatnot. And, of course, he was lambasted and ridiculed and derided for things that were not true. We won't go into all those things now in the interest of time, but that's a very, very interesting chapter in American history. So we're kind of carrying that spirit forward here. So let's get into the premise of this petition.
Okay, well, the premise starts with, I just wanted to bring as an introduction the premise to the petition I wrote about, listening to this reporter asking Senator Rand Paul, how do you deal with the budget deficit? And Rand Paul answered him by saying that under the U.S. Constitution, Congress has two powers. One is to borrow money, and the other is to print it. Well, the reporter should have followed up with a question. Does print money, no one else is talking about printing money to cover a budget deficit. How much would the government have to print? What denominations do you think would Congress do that? Would the banking lobby support it, or would they oppose it? Never had any follow-up question. He just changed the subject completely. It was like, it looked like he looked up and he seen a flock of geese flying. I'd say, well, look at that. He just changed the subject as faster than Jack be nimble, Jack be quick. He could jump over to Kendall's deck. They just don't, they're afraid to touch the topic. Okay, so, but then again, there are many governments in the world that print money to cover their deficits, and they're under attack. They're somehow their main enemies of the United States. One of them is Russia. Russia has very little debt, and the Russians, the Eastern bankers, I recall, went to Russia, and they wanted them to borrow money from the bankers, international bankers in Brussels and from the World Bank to cover their deficit when they didn't have enough rubles. And they basically laughed at him and told him to leave. He said, well, we can print rubles. We don't need your pieces of paper. Pretty much what Abraham Lincoln said to the bankers at the start of the Civil War in the 1860s. They approached him with their paper currency, and they said, well, we'd like to borrow you this to finance the Union. And Lincoln said, you know, we can print this stuff ourselves. And he did. He printed United States notes. And they remained in circulation almost until sometime in the 1980s, without the public knowing about it. They finally destroyed them all, the rest of them that they had left, that
those
the Federal
the
Reserve Banks were holding. They didn't want
those
Federal Reserve. What's that?
Those were the greenbacks I wanted to comment.
Right.
And yes, even in Constitution, Section 8, there's two things very close together. Congress shall have the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States and to coin money and regulate the value thereof, which of course also means to print it. So
sure.
Two things there, and it's a little incongruent there, isn't there? There's a certain contradiction there.
Well, there is. One of the things that I propose in my petition is, number one, I'll get right to the heart of it all. Okay, number one, to finance a credit card, you're not just for the farmers. I'm talking about low-interest credit. Americans are being fleeced today with 15, 20, 25, 30% interest rates from MasterCard, Visa, American Express, you name it. They're depending on your credit rating, but the rates keep going up. And so you have a class of people that need credit, and they just sink deeper and deeper in debt. Well, we don't have to depend on the monopolies to provide us credit. The government can coin money. They can print money. They can give us credit cards, and they can do it a lot cheaper than the credit card companies can. So I'm proposing a national rate of 3%, which is usually an introductory rate that you might get from one of the big credit card companies in the mailer. But I'm proposing this as a constant without changing. And I'm also proposing that the government provide every American with a credit card, and to stimulate the economy, especially during this COVID epidemic, is to put $1,200 on the credit card, and anybody can spend it wherever they want. That's how I would start this introduction of debt-free money. You give some money away. That's how you start it. And then they can apply for lines of credit on there up to, depending on your ability to pay, they would have to be all individually evaluated, those lines of credit. The government would have to handle it just like any company that, you know, handles credit cards would do. That's part of it. The other part of it is in this money creation, the government actually wouldn't even need to print coins or currency. They would enter what you call, they'd order the Federal Reserve Bank to top off their account by a digital entry, which is done on a computer, of $100 billion. Anytime it drops below $100 billion, they'd add $100 billion to it. And that'd be perpetual. What that means is that the government would never have to raise the debt ceiling again. It would never have to borrow any money again. And as the bonds and securities are gradually paid off, the national debt would just gradually go away over a period of 20 or 25 years. There would be no national debt. And since the government has the power to print money and no longer needs the banks, you know, you've been replaced. You know, that's basically what you tell them. So that clause in the Constitution needs to be repealed. that gives Congress the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States. If you have the power to print money, you don't need to borrow credit from banks, because the banks are creating most of the money that they lend the government. And what they're creating is not even legal. It's because the government doesn't cash the checks. If you look at most of the big investors, the wealthiest, and the big banks, they're ready to line up to buy government bonds and security is what they call, because they collect interest on it. Under the banking rules, they get to keep the interest. So what happens, the big problem is the IRS and Department of the Treasury, they never cash any of these checks to see if they're any good. I'm contending that basically, based on my research, that most of these checks with boats, NSF, not sufficient funds, because the cash isn't there for the full value of the check. They might be able to come up with 5% of the value of these checks, but the rest of it is just bookkeeping entries.
Let me stop you there, because I'm hearing
something. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it's important that I interject a little bit, because there's some things I've never heard before. Number one, real quick, I want to check out Russia's situation. Do they, in fact, and I'm not doubting you, I just want to confirm for myself and get a link from you later. I didn't see that one coming. Do they, in fact, mostly rely on their own money and not borrowing in Russia? But number two, another thing I've never heard before and didn't expect today, but that's fine. It's good to explore the unexpected. Is what you're saying is that, if I'm hearing you right, the banks investing in these T-bills and in these government securities are making the investments with empty checks that would bounce, and yet they're realizing interest in return? So, in other words,
that's exactly what they're doing. And what's happening is these checks, most checks go to a clearinghouse where you add something to an account and then you subtract something from another account. I'm saying that the big banks who buy the biggest quantity of these checks are bypassing the clearinghouses. They're just going back to the banks. They're crediting the government accounts. Then the check is returned to them, but it's not deducted from anything because they don't have a checking account. There's nobody to supervise. This is even true of small banks. If they write, there are limits. But I believe, as I read, the Federal Reserve, either the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee or the Federal Reserve Board determines who gets to buy these bonds or securities. There's another issue of a conflict that's got erupted between the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee and the Federal Reserve Board, especially under Ben Bernanke, because he started doing what I advocated. He was buying up these securities and bonds. When the Federal Reserve banks actually buy government bonds, that interest is returned to the U.S. Treasury at the end of each year in a check.
Right.
And you can find that on Google. If the private banks buy it, they don't return the interest back to the Treasury. So why would you want to sell it to private banks? Federal Reserve banks, when they write a check, you have the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston book, which I had many years ago. It says right in there, it says when the Federal Reserve writes a check, it is creating money. Because they just add to an account when it's deposited, but they don't take away from any other account. It's a different kind of check. The kind of check you and I can't write, but they can. So they can advance credits to the government's checking account, either by writing a check or getting on the computer and just adding a deposit, a fictional deposit. And I can give you three examples, if we have time, how even little small banks do this, if you want to hear it.
Go ahead and give at least one or two of those examples. We've got about 12 minutes left.
Okay, let me explain this. You get an offer in the mail, and I've had offers in the mail from Chase One. Okay, that's a big bank. They said, put $5,000 deposit, savings checking account, we'll give you $300 in your account. We'll just add it to your account. And another $300 if you put another $5,000 in savings account. That's $600 total. Well, what they don't tell you, and the question would be asked, if you're sitting there, well, they're offering to do this to you, and you give them cash or whatever you're giving them, well, where is this money coming from? Are you taking it out of your personal savings? Is it coming from the vault? is it coming? Where is this money that you're adding to my account coming from? You would get a blank look from this bank salesman, okay, this service person. You say, well, do you want it or don't you want it? See, they just add it. They just get a, they pull it out of the thin air because the banking rules are letting them do it. And the reason the banks are doing this is they're losing a lot of business to credit unions because by law they're supposed to turn their profits back to their customers. So more people are going to credit unions and they're leaving banks. So credit unions have been one of the biggest threats to the banking monopoly in the last 80 years. And they started right here in Wisconsin. We have UW Credit Union, which is actually owned by the University of Wisconsin. And they're not a bank, a university should be in the business of lending money, but they are because the profits they make, and they set it up in 1940. So they've been making profits for 80 years. It's a stream of money that the taxpayers don't have to pay, and that just people who pay interest on their loans. It trickles back to the universities for spending on what they want to spend it on. That's just one example. Another example of how banks create money is you get a home equity line of credit. What is it? They say, well, we're going to, you have a house worth, say, $200,000. You got to have, you got $20,000 equity, and then they say, so you got $160,000, but you only owe $140,000. Well, they say, you got $20,000 there beyond the 20% security. So we'll just give you a line of credit at a very low interest rate because it's secured. And then you just spend it when you want, but we'll just put it in your checking account. So people use it with a credit card, with a debit card rather, or a check. So what is it? It's not actually money. It's a bookkeeping entry. So the bank raised the potential, but the actual creation of the money is when you use it. It's not that somebody brought some money and it's just sitting there waiting for you to use. The bank created it as a bookkeeping entry loan. And specifically there, they don't even need a check. The same way that they do with opening up accounts, if they offer you a cash incentive. Those are just two examples. I'll forget about the third one. It involves something else. But there are more examples, and it shows the power of the individual bank. Now, there's one bank. Only one state in this country owns its own bank. And that's the bank, that's North Dakota. They have the Bank of North Dakota, which they set up in 1919. That's 101 years ago. Very successful bank. They make in profit every year. They have $7 billion in assets. So they're operating like a commercial bank that's owned by the state. But the profits of that bank go into the state treasury, so they benefit everybody. They don't just benefit a certain group of wealthy families.
Mm-hmm.
So some of my proposals in my book, I have 10 pages of reform proposals. They occur at the federal level. They also occur at the state level. So I'd like to see state governments set up their own state-owned credit unions, state-owned banks, outside the Federal Reserve System. And then in my book, I also explain how they can mint gold and silver coins and actually turn them into legal money by making them negotiable instruments. In other words, you have a legal tender value for use in the state, but you make them redeemable in cash. And I explain how it would work and how they could introduce them in circulation. All those ideas are in the book. They're not part of this petition. The petition would require Congress would order the Federal Reserve Bank to keep topping off the U.S. government's checking account. And so the government never needs to borrow money again, eventually. And that breaks the bond between Wall Street bankers and politicians in Washington. I'm going to stop here and I'll think about everything I just said.
Therefore, purportedly, and one would think that would cut down on corruption by breaking that bond, then the politicians would not be so bound to the financial cartel, if I'm understanding you right. And that, of course, would be an important milestone and an achievement to get the politicians to act in the nation's interest as a whole for the common good under the Constitution, as opposed to just being toadies for the banks and the financial infrastructure. That would be by itself a hugely refreshing thing. And yes, there's no doubt that largely relying, if not completely relying, on the creation of money interest-free without usury, as opposed to borrowing, that would be another huge milestone, irrespective of all the details that are in your book and would be too multiplicitous to get into right now with the time we have left. But suffice to say that your petition spells out pretty clearly how to help the farming community and, by extension, a interesting blueprint on how to help society as a whole. I would add that there are other theories out there. The American and Canadian and European and British social credit movement from the early 1930s, Major C.H. Douglas had some interesting ideas. The American Monetary Institute under the late Steve Zarlenga had some similar ideas to what you're talking about. The social creditors, not to be confused with the Chinese surveillance system, would say give the people a dividend, a stimulus check on occasion, rather than a credit card. That would be the difference there. But it all points to the same basic problem, that we got to get out from under the yoke of the banksters and have a system that serves everyone. And that is a goal that all these different ideas and all these schools of thought have in common, whatever their differences and details might be. It's a lot to sort out and unpack, but it's a very worthy goal, and a lot of good can come from this. That's the thing. And the farmers, of course, are special because we got to eat. And to see the family farms go under like this from the yoke of debt is truly disturbing. Your thoughts? We're winding up here, but we got about 4 minutes left. But that would be my observations at this juncture.
Okay, I will tell you that I've covered quite a bit of territory. Some of the harder things, I can tell you the. Well, there are a lot of things I propose in my book. I assume that there's fraud going on in the purchase of government bonds and securities by the big banks. I would have the president issue an executive order if he really wants to, if he has the testosterone to do it. Make him come with actual cash to buy these bonds. And then don't bring the cash back to the Federal Reserve Bank, because they'll just move it back to the bank where the check came from. You'll have to. The government should have its own bank or store it in vaults right at the Treasury Department. But the sale of bonds simply and securities needs to come to an end. No more debt. The debt will be gradually paid off under this plan, because the Federal Reserve will keep adding digital dollars to the government's checking account, and it's up to Congress to decide how to spend the money. And if they're spending too much, then the voters can tell them you're spending too much. But there's a lot of people hurting in this country right now. We have 200,000 businesses that have gone under. The government starts providing some interest-free credit. The government should start buying up a lot of these debt, including these farm mortgages. They should keep the farmers on the farm. A lot of business debt, the government with interest-free money, you're not going to get this from the banks. They're not going to give anything interest-free. When you can buy this debt out, the government becomes the owner of the debt, and then the government can suspend payment of interest during the COVID crisis, or it can suspend payment of both principal and interest and then resume it when the economy gets back to normal. I mean, there is so much good can be done when money is created, spent wisely, and is debt-free. That's where we're headed. That's where I hope we're headed.
It would seem to me the government could also have a jubilee, and if it so chose, even forgive the debt or parts of it.
You're not going to get, there are students on the progressive left, they want all the student debts forgiven. Well, private banks are not going to forgive it. The government's going to have to pay off these loans and assume ownership of them. And then they're in a position to start to eliminate the interest rates, for one thing. Because it doesn't cost anything for the government to create digital dollars. They don't even have to print money to do that. And then they can start, they can decide what's fair in debt forgiveness as an alternative to bankruptcy. You start dissolving large portions of debt in the country to congressional forgiveness. That's what needs to be done. But the government needs to own the debt first. Then it can do it. And the others, they don't have any more say about it. Then you got paid. You pay off all those loans, and the government owns those debts. And then it's that's the process of forgiving in part or total those debts. Whatever is fair and just, and that alone is would be a very lengthy subject to discuss in a lot of areas.
We wind up today's show. What is the name of your book? I want to be clear. I'm not sure I got that nailed down.
Okay, the book is called Money Creation, From the Knights Templars to Wall Street Bankers. Okay. You can read that. You can order the book at LeveauxBooks.com. The book is only $7. And it's $3 postage. With that, you get a copy of the petition to the president. You can make extra copies yourself of it and just send it to the president. Members of Congress, two senators, one congressman, your local newspaper. If it's independent, it might be interested in covering the story, or it might not. But there are certain papers in the country, but LeveauxBooks.com, I'll give you that address. I'll spell it out for you. It's LeveauxBooks.com.
Yes, a French name. Hey, a real quick curiosity, where in Lower Michigan did you grow up?
I didn't grow up. I was born in Flint, Michigan, and I was raised in Upper Michigan in Menominee County. Oh, just west of a little town called Kearney in Natal, Michigan.
Yeah, I'm from Bridgman over in Berrien County, south of Grand Rapids, just west of Kalamazoo. That's where I'm originally
from.
Okay,
you were in Lower Michigan then, okay.
Yeah, the southwesternmost county bordering Indiana in the lower southwest corner. That's where I'm originally from. I just wanted to check that out. Kind of a
I was in the most southern county in Upper Michigan is where I was raised, Menominee County.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been through there. Absolutely. Yeah, Michiganders have a history, including Father Coughlin, of fighting this machine. And, of course, he teamed up with Huey Long to a degree. And it's nice to kind of see that legacy, in a sense, continued. Certainly helping the farmers was something that great radio priest talked about. I was just at the Church of the Little Flower this past October, which has become a national shrine now, but Father Coughlin is still honored there to a reasonable degree, although the church leaders there are very mum about his actual radio broadcasts about banking. They'd rather have people forget about that, although they have a display about him there. It doesn't touch much on that, and that's kind of sad to see that even the church has dropped the ball on supporting him. And they've given way to believing the propaganda or acting like they do. But Conrad LeBeau, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity for me to share all this information with you.
Yeah,
appreciate that very much.
Live and on the archive, feel free, of course, to order his book, get the petition, get involved. Keep learning more about this banking monster. It's the one thing we have to slay no matter what else we do. We'll see you next time on Stop the Presses.
Extendivite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Amazon customer, 5 out of 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Dr. Sam Surreal. Good product and ingredients. Kept my blood pressure normal after mild heart attack in 2015. Switched to plant-based diet also to reverse atherosclerosis. John Bispico's, 5 out of 5 stars. Built up my immune system. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.